Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Criminal Penalties and Trial by Jury Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On March 19, 2012, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Southern Union Company v. United States. The question in this case is whether the imposition of criminal fines is subject to the Fifth and Sixth Amendment principles articulated in Apprendi v. New Jersey, which holds that, quote, other than the facts of a prior conviction, any fact that increases the penalty for a crime beyond the prescribed statutory maximum must be submitted to a jury and proved beyond reasonable doubt, end quote. To discuss the case, we have Ryan Scott, who is an associate professor at Indiana University Maurer School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Scott.
Hi there. My name is Ryan Scott. I'm a professor of law at Indiana University's Maurer School of Law in Bloomington, Indiana. And I am offering a description of Southern Union Company versus United States, a case that the Supreme Court heard oral argument in just last week on Monday, March 19th. Southern Union is a company that was charged with knowingly storing hazardous waste without a permit in violation of the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, an environmental statute. The statute provided for a fine of not more than $50,000 for each day of violation, and the judge found that the violation had continued for 762 days and imposed a fine of $6 million. The question in the case is whether the Sixth Amendment required that a jury, rather than the judge, make the factual finding about the length of the violation. How many days did the violation continue? In a case called Apprendi versus New Jersey, more than a decade ago in 2000, the Supreme Court held that under the Sixth Amendment, which guarantees a right to a jury trial in criminal cases, any fact that increases the length of a prison sentence above the otherwise applicable maximum must be admitted in a guilty plea or found by a jury beyond a reasonable doubt. Southern Union gives this court a chance to decide whether the rule of Apprendi also applies to criminal fines. So today in the podcast, I'll be talking about the basic legal arguments that both sides have advanced, and I'll offer a few observations about the consequences of the court's decision, the stakes for criminal defendants and for the government, and I'll close with a description of the recent oral arguments and some guesses about how individual justices and the court might resolve the case. By way of preview, my basic claims today are that this case presents a fairly narrow issue, one that won't arise often, but when it does arise, the stakes frequently will be high for the defendant, and it's unusually difficult to predict the outcome of this one. We have two new justices on the court and a fairly muddy historical record that doesn't clearly support either side, so guesswork is especially hazardous in this area where the justices don't break down on predictable ideological lines, and the oral arguments are therefore pretty interesting as a barometer of what the court might do next. So let me start by describing the basic legal arguments of both sides, starting with the argument of the petitioner, Southern Union. That's a corporation that was prosecuted for violations of the environmental laws. Southern Union's argument rests on the strength of Apprendi, this precedent from 12 years ago. That decision shook up sentencing dramatically, both in the state and federal systems, by holding that any fact other than a prior conviction that increases a prison sentence above the otherwise applicable maximum must be found by a jury beyond a reasonable doubt. It may not be found by a judge by a preponderance of the evidence. That had a whole bunch of consequences, not just for statutes that aggravate prison sentences like the issue in Apprendi, but for sentencing guideline systems. In one famous application of the rule of Apprendi, the United States federal sentencing guidelines were struck down as unconstitutional and replaced with advisory guidelines in the Booker decision from 2005. The Supreme Court has since extended the rule of Apprendi to capital cases, cases involving a sentence of death. But so far, the court has not extended the rule to criminal fines, and the basic argument on behalf of the petitioner, Southern Union, is that this fact, the number of days of a violation, is just like the facts at issue in cases like Apprendi. It's a fact that's necessary to increase the punishment. The jury in this case, the argument goes, only found that there was a violation, didn't specify how long the violation lasted. It could have been as little as a single day. And so the only thing that the jury authorized was a fine of up to $50,000. By imposing a fine of $6 million, the judge intruded upon the role that the jury was supposed to perform, deciding how long the violation lasted. at trial, the defense was not really focused on the number of days of violation. The defense was that this wasn't really hazardous waste being stored without a permit at all, that the company intended to reuse, it was mercury was the hazardous waste, and they intended to reuse the mercury, and so it wasn't waste because they planned to reclaim it. Before the U.S. Supreme Court, the petitioner now contends that because there was some factual dispute about the intent of the company to reclaim it, we can't be sure how long the violation lasted. It might have been less than the number of days that would be necessary to support a $6 million fine. So essentially, apply the logic of Apprendi is the argument on behalf of Southern Union. Notably, Apprendi was a very close 5-4 decision, and by an unusual coalition of justices, the five justices in the majority included some folks who are traditionally on the left wing of the court, folks like Justice Stevens, Justice Ginsburg, and Justice Souter, but also Justice Scalia and Justice Thomas, two of the court's conservative members, with the other four justices, also a mixture of left, right, and center, in dissent. So this was an unusual pattern of voting for the court, if you think of the court on traditional ideological lines, and one that was also quite a narrow decision. So the appetite to extend Apprendi is limited because Apprendi itself was a pretty close one. The government, on the other hand, contends that Apprendi should not be extended to criminal fines, and its principal case is a more recent decision, a 2009 decision called Oregon versus ICE. In that case, the Supreme Court declined to extend this Apprendi rule to facts that are necessary to support a consecutive rather than concurrent sentence when a defendant is convicted of, for example, multiple counts of the same offense or two offenses in the same case. The reasoning of Oregon versus ICE was that there was a long history of judicial discretion in making this decision about whether to impose consecutive rather than concurrent sentences. This was historically not something that juries were involved in at all. It was something that the judge predominantly decided on his own, with very few exceptions. That was not within the province of jury trial right. And the government makes the same argument here. Just as with consecutive versus concurrent sentences, fines were something that was traditionally a matter of judicial discretion, that there was no historical role for juries to make the kinds of factual findings that are at issue in modern statutes like these environmental laws, where the number of days of violations is a key to calibrating the length of the sentence. Oregon versus ICE, interestingly, was also a very close 5-4 decision with a slightly different, unusual coalition of justices. In particular, in that case, Justices Stevens and Ginsburg voted to uphold the sentencing practice, even though they had joined the majority in Apprendi. So, again, a very close split, and one that appeared to be based on the same kinds of historical arguments that the court had rejected in Apprendi. ICE took a lot of observers, including me, by surprise. I had expected a kind of formal arithmetic extension of Apprendi to the kinds of facts that are needed to support a consecutive rather than concurrent sentence. So that decision took people by surprise and perhaps signaled that this was a high watermark for the Apprendi decision after shaking up sentencing so dramatically both at the federal and state level. Perhaps the court said that we've done enough and we'll back away from the dramatic changes that we've been making. And ICE seemed to be one decision supporting that reading. So the question is, will the court continue to cabin the scope of Apprendi when it decides how to resolve cases involving facts necessary to impose fines, or will it treat the question of fines as essentially the same as the issue of the length of a prison sentence and treat ICE as an isolated exception, one that was peculiar to decisions about multiple count cases and the decision about consecutive rather than concurrent sentences? How big a deal is this case? Does it matter as a practical matter in a lot of decisions? This is a decision that actually will arise in fairly narrow circumstances. Both sides agree that there are a dozen or so federal statutes and a number of other statutes at the state level that have fines that are calibrated to the number of days of offense, or another common kind of fact that's necessary to set fines is the amount of gain for a defendant or the amount of loss that is suffered by victims. Those are the most common kinds of facts that this kind of case implicates. In addition to having a relatively small number of statutes in which this issue can arise, Frequently, the facts, the number of days of the violation or the amount of the gain or loss, for example, that's often uncontested in cases like this. The government says that the defendant really didn't contest the number of days of violation, and the jury effectively found the length of the violation anyway, on or about X date to on or about Y date. That sort of recitation is frequently appears in indictments and would be a good way of resolving cases like these. The jury could be instructed to find the length of the violation, for example, with relative ease in a lot of cases like these. Sometimes, however, the kinds of facts that would be implicated by a victory for the defendant in this case would be very difficult to establish at trial. In fraud cases, for example, the amount of loss to victims or the amount of gain to the defendant can be an extremely complicated matter to resolve. In fact, when calculating restitution, the federal rules explicitly allow for a judge to delay making a determination about restitution until after sentencing. It's so complicated it can't even be done at sentencing. So accelerating that kind of finding and putting it before the jury at trial would be, as a practical matter, quite burdensome for the government. Hard to get a complete accounting of the effects of a fraud, and moving that timetable up would be difficult. The government also makes a kind of slippery slope argument about the consequences of this case. If Southern Union were to prevail, the argument goes, it would be difficult to differentiate between fines, facts necessary to set the amount of a fine, and facts necessary to support the amount of restitution or forfeiture. All of those kinds of facts would have to be put before the jury as well, and that would be a serious practical consequence. There was dictum in the Oregon versus ICE decision that suggested that restitution, forfeiture, and fines would fall outside of the scope of Apprendi, in part for these kinds of practical reasons. For defendants, this would be a potentially significant win in the slice of cases involving these kinds of statutes and which the amount of the fine is significant and perhaps contested. It could mean that defendants' bargaining position is better. The terms of a plea agreement, for example, might include an agreement about the maximum number of days of violation or the maximum amount of loss or gain to which the defendant would admit, and that would be a way of improving the outcome for a criminal defendant where the amount of the fine is potentially significant. Let me describe briefly the oral arguments, which happened just last week. They were excellent, and by two really first-rate advocates. Carter Phillips of Sidley Austin argued on behalf of Southern Union Company, and Michael Dreeben, the Deputy Solicitor General, one of the premier advocates on criminal issues in the Solicitor General's office, argued on behalf of the government. The questions from the justices in some ways were exactly what you would predict. Justices Breyer and Alito, Justice Breyer, who had dissented in a whole line of Apprendi-type cases, and Justice Alito, who was in dissent in Oregon versus ICE, both played to form, asking exactly the kinds of questions you would expect in light of their previous skepticism about the kinds of arguments that had been made in earlier cases. Likewise, Justice Scalia, one of the driving forces behind the Apprendi line of cases, was very skeptical of the government's position. What we were really interested in as frequent court watchers in cases like these are how two new justices on the court would respond. Both Justice Kagan, who has succeeded Justice Stevens, and Justice Sotomayor are new to the case since this line of cases was decided, and their votes could be significant given that both Apprendi and ICE were razor-thin 5-4 decisions. Any sign that their views might differ from those of their predecessors could be significant. And they offered relatively few clues. Both had questions for both sides, and it's always hazardous to guess how people will vote based on their questions at oral argument. If there's one subject on which both of them could agree, and some others on the court expressed this sentiment as well, it was that the history on which both sides were relying seemed to be ambiguous, that there was no clear common law history, no consensus practice at the founding about what role juries would play in finding facts that were relevant to the setting of criminal fines. The number of cases was very few, the practice apparently fairly varied, and both sides seemed to have little to go on as far as proving up their case. Different justices expressed disagreement about which direction that cuts. So if the history is ambiguous, for Justice Scalia, who's a strong supporter of the rule of Apprendi, that seemed to signal that the ordinary Apprendi rule would apply, that we would need some contrary history, some way to differentiate fines from prison sentences to justify a different result for facts that extend the length of a prison term. By contrast, some other justices suggest that an ambiguous history meant that the rule of apprendi ought not apply. It was only history that led the court to this conclusion that the jury trial right included facts necessary to increase a sentence above the otherwise applicable maximum. And without a clear historical record that this is impermissible, the default ought to be that it's permissible to assign that role to a judge in light of the history of judicial discretion in this area. There was also concern by different members of the court about the practical implications of the ruling. As I said, federal law allows judges to defer decisions about restitution and other facts until after sentencing, and there was a concern that accelerating that sort of decision to trial would be unmanageable for both the federal government in cases like Southern Union and for state judicial systems that have comparable factual findings that are necessary to support the imposition of a fine, the level of a fine. The court also discussed a few side issues, whether the corporation really had a jury trial right here, whether there might have been a waiver of the issue. But I expect none of those will end up being decisive in the case. It looked like the court was focused on deciding this question whether Apprendi should apply to criminal fines, and it is unusually difficult, both because of the thin margin of the previous cases and the hard-to-discern comments of the justices at oral argument, how they will come out. So I expect this will be a close one, but the court might surprise us and issue a ruling in favor of the government here by a more lopsided margin than usual. Very hard to say. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.